Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and what an announcement by Democratic Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist, who's running to become Michigan's next governor in 2026. Now, Gilchrist is running in the Democratic primary against Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson and Genesee County Sheriff Chris Swanson. And Benson has called for a peaceful end to the fighting in Gaza, while Swanson says that he would like to find a lasting ceasefire and for Israel to allow humanitarian aid to enter Gaza to help the Palestinian people. However, neither Benson nor Swanson have done what Gilchrist did last weekend at the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee's National Convention in Dearborn, known as ArabCon. Listen.
The Netanyahu government is committing a genocide on the Palestinian people. This is not a matter of opinion. This is a matter of fact. This has been established by the global leaders who study genocide. This is not something that we should support. American taxpayer dollars should not fund offensive weapons of war while children are starving, while medical resources are being blocked to civilians, and while lineages of families are being erased.
Well, that's not only a bold step for Garland Gilchrist to take, but it's the correct step to take. It's the humanitarian step to take. It's the right call. Special thanks to a strong Michigan progressive activist group known as Distill Social for providing that video on social media. As you heard, Gilchrist declared Israel's extreme right-wing Netanyahu government is committing a genocide to the Palestinian people. And as you also heard, the crowd there erupted in raucous applause. I mean, can you just imagine, had Kamala Harris done the same? Anyway, Gilchrist correctly noted how declaring the right-wing Israeli government's actions against those in Gaza to be war crimes, he said that it's not just his opinion, but it's also by those who study genocide. But there's more from his speech. Gilchrist declared that he would not accept any money from the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, known as AIPAC, the largest and most powerful right-wing Israeli lobby in the United States. It's a lobby that's been very successful at bribing, donating to politicians on both sides of the aisle, which explains why, even though a strong majority of the Democratic base voters are fed up with the Netanyahu regime, a majority of Democratic officials, especially in D.C., continue to support Israel with no strings attached. But that solid foundation is finally beginning to crack on the Democratic side, slowly, but it's progress, I suppose, but it shouldn't be that slow. Amnesty International and the United Nations Independent International Commission of Inquiry have each declared Israel's destruction of Gaza to be what it appears to any sane and rational person in the entire world, a genocide. I'm wondering if Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson will do the right thing. I'm wondering if Sheriff Swanson will have the temerity to do the right thing. Naturally, Gilchrist's truth-telling is getting attacked by pro-Netanyahu supporters and apologists. The Jewish Federation of Detroit, in a statement, said, "We are deeply disappointed by Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist's recent remarks labeling Israel's war against terror organization Hamas a genocide and using his campaign as a platform to vilify support for Israel." Yeah, that's right, everyone. Don't you dare tell the truth about the right-wing MAGA Netanyahu's genocide. Don't you dare do that, America. Don't do that, especially you Michigan politicians. And then the Jewish Federation did the following, which was coming miles away. "We expect our elected representatives to reject political rhetoric that plays into anti-Semitic tropes and instead promote peace and understanding among all Michiganders." Again, you're an anti-Semite if you're calling what historians, experts, and international government bodies say is a genocide being committed by Israel. I mean, it is a tired trope, very tired, and one that's being rightfully ignored by good progressive-minded and commonsensical people. I mean, there's the Trump regime siding with and even dining with known anti-Semites, but that tends to get ignored by many of these same groups. And it gets ignored by AIPAC. I'll repeat, let's see if Jocelyn Benson and Chris Swanson can do the same. It shouldn't be that hard. Don't forget to subscribe to Left of Lansing wherever you are listening to the podcast. And please give it a good 5-star review. That's important. Even more, visit my YouTube page and subscribe there as well. With right-wing tech bro billionaire forces taking over social media sites, it's up to every one of us to share progressive shows such as this one with others and to subscribe and like what you're hearing and seeing. And that not only helps us here in podcast land, but it helps the progressive cause in spreading good, common sense, popular, progressive voices across Michigan and across the nation. Okay. Now listen to this one. Okay. With MAGA Michigan loon Congresswoman Lisa McClain from the Thumb region visiting Joe Coffey on MSNBC this week, where she voiced her unending support for Dear Leader's military advancements into American cities.
Now, are you saying you support the National Guard possibly going into some of these cities and not like the Marines, the Air Force, the Army, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes. What I support is the Constitution. So let's start with that. What I would support even more is, why don't some of these Democratic mayors just admit that they have a problem and let help come in? What's the problem with that? We make everything so partisan. Why don't we stop? You know, this isn't a Democrat versus a Republican. This is about American. No different than the shutdown right now. If we stop making this a partisan issue, Democrat versus Republicans, and do what's right for the American people, I actually think we'd get a lot farther.
If you would just allow her daddy to give you a good spanking, everything would be so much better. Oh, God. I mean, this is not a Democratic versus Republican issue. Of course it's not, Lisa. Sure. That's why your dear leader's only sending in National Guard troops to Democratic-run cities like Portland or Chicago. And I know this has been pointed out in other news outlets and shows, including The Daily Show with Jon Stewart this week. But let me read this one paragraph from Evan Watson in Portland, Oregon. Watson works for KGW-TV in Portland, which is an NBC affiliate. Listen, he says, during a Sunday morning phone interview with NBC White House correspondent Yamichi Alcindor, Trump made some remarks that seemed to indicate he might be backing off his military plan for Portland. Trump referenced a weekend conversation with Oregon Governor Tina Kotek, and he alluded to being told by Kotek that the reality in Portland is different from what's being portrayed to him. I spoke to the governor. She was very nice, Trump said. But I said, well, wait a minute. Am I watching things on television that are different than what's happening? My people tell me different. Okay, that makes so much more sense for Dear Leader to believe such a lie, since he only watches Fox News. But Portland isn't filled with crime in the streets. And yeah, I even saw some right-winger post a video of a few unhoused people in some Portland street. I guess that proves that we need the Pentagon to order 200 military personnel in the street to deal with unhoused people? What? You know, we could just find shelter and, I don't know, more affordable housing for them. Just saying. Ah, screw it. We've got to play war games in American streets with the working class rather than spending money more wisely to help the working class in America. Besides, Dear Leader says he saw nothing but carnage on that old TV set. Is Dear Leader being given false representations of what's really happening in Portland? Or does he know it's a lie, but he doesn't care? I don't know. What if it's a little of both? That's why he is mentally turning into mush. Good on Democratic Governor from Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, by the way, for saying the following after Dear Leader suggested that we use American cities as training grounds for the military. It appears that Donald Trump not only has dementia set in, but he's copying tactics of Vladimir Putin, sending troops into cities, thinking that that's some sort of proving ground for war, or that indeed there's some sort of internal war going on in the United States is just frankly inane, and I'm concerned for his health. There's something genuinely wrong with this man, and the 25th Amendment ought to be invoked. He's right, and I still don't understand why our governor here in Michigan isn't saying the same. But back to Lisa McClain, if you don't mind, because I want to go back to that part of that ludicrous statement where McClain said that Democrats and Republicans must work together to end the Trump regime's self-imposed government shutdown. Hey, Lisa, and all of the MAG Republicans listening to this, okay, come on, now gather around. I'm going to tell you guys all a little secret here, all right? Listen. You MAGA Republicans, all of you, control the White House, the House of Representatives, the United States Senate, and the Supreme Court. The government shutdown is because of you. And I think you like it that way since, well, that's what the Trump regime is telling you to do, to keep the government shut down. Oh, MAGA Republicans are going on the old TV and complaining about Democrats causing the shutdown because there aren't enough senators to pass a short-term funding bill since the vote has to gain the approval of, I think, 60 senators. But nothing has stopped MAGA Republicans from dismissing the filibuster in other votes or with other bills or with judicial appointees. If they truly, truly, truly wanted this short-term budget bill passed, they would just vote to end the filibuster tomorrow. You know it, I know it, but they won't do it. And here's why. And it's a theory by the American Prospect's David Dayan, good friend of the podcast, by the way, that I happen to agree with. The government's essentially been shut down since last March. David Dayan wrote in his American Prospect piece titled, "The Government Has Been Shut Down for Months," and I'm quoting here, "activities deemed, quote unquote, essential by the president, like stalking immigrants, lobbing missiles at Iran, etc., have gone on and on. But activities purported to conflict with the president's policies, regardless of whether they have been authorized by the lawmaking body of the United States, have been stopped, interrupted only by occasional federal courts telling the president that doing so is illegal, which the Supreme Court subsequently brushes aside." Yeah. Like I said, Lisa McClain, you MAGA Republicans are all in control, all right? You have control of all of the power in every branch of government. And they know that to be true. They know that to be true, which is why they're sending out Ohio's working class hero, who's bankrolled, of course, by billionaire tech bros like Peter Thiel, J.D. Vance, to flatly lie to everyone by saying that the shutdown's happening because Democrats want to give health care to undocumented people. Now, first of all, to be factual, that's already against the law. All right? Undocumented citizens cannot receive any health care. But federal law does guarantee that non-citizens will receive care in emergency rooms. And I don't know, but I guess maybe that's the least we can do in what some consider this to be a Christian nation. Look, I actually believe that those who are here and who are paying taxes because they are working here should probably benefit from some of the taxes they are paying, even if they are undocumented. I mean, the left-leaning think tank, the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, unveiled a study last year, and I talked about this last year, showing undocumented immigrants paid nearly $100 billion in federal, state, and local taxes in 2022. And as Amber Belzer from the Michigan League for Public Policy noted last year, Michigan remains home to an estimated 111,000 undocumented immigrants who contributed $290.1 million in 2022, a figure that would rise by $63.1 million if all were granted legal status. But I know, everyone, we can't do the logical thing. We can't take the logical steps in helping those who've been here and who've been contributing to the betterment of our state and to our society by, you know, maybe making it easier for them to gain citizenship. We can't do something like that. I mean, are you kidding? We've got to fearmonger and send beer-bellied ICE agents, as Salon's Amanda Marcotte calls them, to terrorize and kidnap friends and family members off the streets. This is America. Now, what Democrats are demanding as part of this short-term budget resolution is a restoration of the Medicaid cuts that were passed as part of last summer's MAGA murder budget. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders plainly stated the truth when he said, "If we do what the Republicans want us to do and pass a clean bill with no input at all from the opposition, 15 million Americans will lose their health insurance and tens of thousands will die unnecessarily every single year." He's right. And we can't forget about the rural hospital closures as a result of the MAGA budget last summer, which will also hurt rural Michiganders. We've covered that endlessly here on the podcast. And Democrats are looking to pass an enhanced premium tax credit, which is an Obamacare subsidy, okay, used by millions and millions of working class Americans to help pay for rising insurance costs. CBS News reports the cost of premiums for people who buy their insurance through the ACA marketplaces could more than double, rising from an average of $888 in 2025 to $1,904 in 2026, according to KFF. And about 4 million people would likely drop their insurance coverage if the credit is allowed to expire because they would not be able to afford the cost as the Congressional Budget Office has estimated. Of course, we could all solve this in one quick and simple way, making healthcare universal throughout the country, but I digress. Now, rather than back the working class in this country and in Michigan, the Trump regime and his MAGA Congress cohorts would rather let the people suffer and keep the government closed and allow cruel people like the Office of Management and Budget head Russell Vought fire more federal workers, just as he, Elon, and Doge did last spring. It's all about reversing America back to the Gilded Age, and it's about protecting the billionaire oligarch class, a.k.a. all of the rich white people. Good job by all of those Michigan Democrats in Congress for holding their ground, all right, on this whole vote and voting for the right side. And that also includes you, Congresswoman Haley Stevens and Senator Alyssa Sokin. Hey, I'll give credit when credit is warranted, all right? And I'll give it when it is especially due. But Haley Stevens may not want to hear what I have to say next. Politico reported last weekend that Haley Stevens is heading off to Napa Valley in California in a couple of weeks. I mean, it must be nice while the government is shut down. Now, you know, I'll give Haley Stevens the benefit of the doubt. Is she touring working conditions for employees at wineries? Or maybe she's studying how climate change is ruining the wine industry there. I mean, the government might still be shut down at that time. I mean, I think it's a legitimate question to ask, what is so important for Haley Stevens to skedaddle out of Michigan and visit Napa Valley? Well, it appears Haley is the guest of honor for a luxurious Napa retreat that's being put on by the head of the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee head, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Ugh. And listen to this, according to Politico. The itinerary features accommodations at the Hotel Yountville, where a resort and spa that extends a Tuscan European vibe, and wine tour and dinner at the Staglin Family Vineyards amid its wine caves. Back to you, Johnny. I mean, you understand. You understand everybody, right? Stevens has to take this trip. I mean, sure, the livelihoods of thousands of federal workers are hanging in the balance, but Haley Stevens just has to figure out what lies in those mysterious wine caves. You know, for the working class. And I'm sorry, but the view here, I think, is far more preferable than in Napa Valley, just my opinion. You see, corporate Democrats like Kirsten Gillibrand, they are now tipping their hand, saying that they support Stevens over her Democratic primary opponents for Michigan's open U.S. Senate seat next year, Abdul Al-Sayed and Mallory McMorrow. But I think that's how it was always going to be. Of course, corporate Democrats were always going to back Haley Stevens. But I have to say, there is something called strategy, and that's severely, severely lacking for Haley Stevens' campaign and for some in this Democratic Senate campaign committee. And they also just severely failed to grasp the concept of logic and optics. They cannot capture the working class. Unbelievable. And I think that's why I wish that we had ranked choice voting here in Michigan. I mean, think about it. Rather than handcuffing Michiganders by forcing them to vote for just one candidate, imagine if Michiganders could rank their candidates for this upcoming Democratic Senate primary. And you could perhaps get a coalition of voters to come together and ensure that one or two of the best candidates would top the ballot. And it also builds consensus voting. Well, there's such a movement taking place to make Michigan a ranked choice voting state as petitions are going around and signatures are being collected to allow Michiganders to vote on a ballot initiative next year to enshrine ranked choice voting in the state's constitution. Joe Spalding is the campaign director for Rank My Vote, and he's coming on to tell us more about this effort and why it would work here in Michigan. You're listening to LOL.
He enjoys watching sporting events from years ago. He can recite most of the 1984 Detroit Tigers lineup. He will go to the mat in saying Michigan has produced some of the greatest music in the past 60 years. But most of all, he enjoys the loyalty of a fine dog while sipping on a tasty Michigan beer. Oh, and he loves talking about politics, if you haven't been able to tell yet. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need more Pat? Visit and subscribe to leftoflansing.com. Now, back to Pat.
I'll remind you again that the best way to reach me is through email, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Or, of course, you can leave comments where I post thoughts, my arguments, some of my audios, some of my videos on Facebook, Twitter, the Gram, or on YouTube. All right, it's been a while since I've talked with this week's guest. He spent so much of his time advocating against the MAGA Ottawa Impact faction on the Ottawa County Commission and even helping spearhead some changes on that commission. He played an integral role in helping get the Voters Not Politicians initiative on the ballot back in 2018, which ended backroom gerrymandering and instead made it a more fair and open process when it came to redistricting. And he's always out there making appearances and taking on some of the MAGA forces there when it needs to be done. And now he is the campaign director to bring ranked choice voting to Michigan through a ballot initiative in 2026. The group is called Rank My Vote. Joe Spaulding is my guest again this week on Left of Lansing. And Joe, it's great to have you back. How are you holding up nowadays?
What isn't that the question, you know? And Pat, it's great to be here. That was just one stellar introduction. I'm super happy to be here talking to you. And I'm holding up really well. Actually, the best thing personally about this ranked choice voting petition is that I have this clear focus with a clear goal, and it kind of dulls down some of the other persistent chaotic noise, although a lot of the more egregious things that happen do kind of shine through. So, you know, we're not completely removed from the news cycle. We're a part of it. We just have a lot of really, really positive focus, and we've got 2,000 volunteers out there that are putting in the work to make it so we can vote for our hopes, not our fears. And at the end of the day, that gives me a lot of hope.
And I have to tell you, Joe, that I ran into one of the volunteers for Rank My Vote here in Gratiot County, and they were collecting a lot of signatures there. That was about a few weeks ago. And so I just want to let you know that they are pretty much, I think, everywhere around the state, and it's a popular cause. When it comes to this issue of ranked choice voting, because I just like to talk about it maybe for some who still really don't exactly know what it's all about, because I believe that it is something that casual political observers, and I'll be honest with you, Joe, I mean, even those like me who live and breathe politics, I heard about ranked choice voting the last few years, but didn't exactly know what it was about. I mean, I knew it was being used in two states like Alaska and Maine, I believe, but I could be wrong in this assumption, but I really think more people became aware of ranked choice voting when Zoran Mamdani won the mayoral primary race there in New York City. And that's when another progressive city official, Brad Lander, he teamed up with Mamdani and encouraged his supporters to make Mamdani their second choice. And that's when it seemed like this idea of ranked choice voting really became more clear, I think, to a lot of people out there. And to me, I think it signaled that what ranked choice voting is about is building this coalitions rather than on one candidate. Can you tell me if I'm wrong, but also, is that what primarily drove you to bring ranked choice voting here to Michigan and to fight for it?
Yeah. And so, I mean, I have my personal story, and Rank My Vote, the organization that's running our petition, has their story. You know, Rank My Vote was founded in 2019 by volunteers who had helped us end gerrymandering with Voters Not Politicians, and they wanted to see this change. And not everybody instantly saw the same thing that they did in terms of the need. But I think increasingly, and unfortunately, increasingly in Michigan and today, we're seeing kind of the spillover into this world of political violence and political adjacent violence from the negativity and the negative intensity of our politics. And so when we talk about politics that relies on building coalitions, like we directly saw in New York City, and it wasn't just Brad Lander, by the way, most of the non-billionaire candidates there formed a coalition with similar mechanisms. And the astounding thing is they beat the billionaire establishment candidate. And so what we know with ranked choice voting is that the incentive that it produces is towards that type of collaborative politics. And we know that it beats the well-financed billionaire campaign. Now, what do those well-financed billionaire campaigns spend their money on? What do out-of-state billionaires spend their money on through out-of-state consultants? Negative attack ads. And so when that happens, when a consultant tells a politician that they need to go negative and they need to start attacking their opponent, what they're doing is they're making a very cynical calculation. And I think folks are fairly generally aware of this. If a candidate goes negative against an opponent, that candidate knows that overall voters are going to get sick of that nonsense. And so turnout goes down when campaigns go negative. The calculation that they're making is that turnout goes down more for the other guy than for the campaign that they are supporting. And that cynical calculation has a predictable result. We see cycle after cycle of increased negativity driving lower turnout. And this is something that we saw in Ottawa County when we were working on the Ottawa County Board of Commissioners situation to stop Ottawa Impact. And frankly, that negative turnout feedback loop was the prime breeding ground for an organization like Ottawa Impact to step in and get elected on low turnout elections because the voters are sick of the nonsense. Now, in elections with ranked choice voting, we do see increased turnout cycle after cycle. We saw increased turnout in the election that brought us Eric Adams to be mayor of New York there. And in this previous one, we saw massively increased turnout in the mayoral primary this past summer. And that's also predictable given that decrease in negativity and that increase in the incentive that ranked choice voting brings towards collaboration. And so when the voters aren't sitting there constantly hearing attack ads in the election cycle, they actually show up to vote for the issues that matter to them. And those also happen to be the issues that those candidates have to be speaking to in order to get elected. I mean, you can bet your bottom dollar that Mondami was talking about housing a lot. We don't even need to say this. Like, everybody right. knows what the issue was, right? Yeah. And so when it comes to that, ranked choice voting changes that incentive from negative attack ads, from zero-sum negative attack ads, and puts the reward structure in favor of building these coalitions. And then we see the increased turnout on the other end. My personal story, man, I like policies that voters like, that empower voters, and that encourage them to turn out and vote more. So when you look at the stuff that I've done, thank you for mentioning that stuff earlier on. Ending gerrymandering stops that backroom manipulation that sends voters homes on election day, keeps voters home on election day. Stopping Ottawa Impact, that helped clear up a lot of noise, and it actually drove down ballot participation in ways that now the statewide Democratic Party is chasing by doing hyper local actions. I think that they're concentrated on doing a write-in campaign for a clerk. That's awesome. You know, mm-hmm. those are the types of actions that when the state party does those things, they're building permanent campaign infrastructure. And those parties should be permanent campaign infrastructure for the folks that want to run under those banners. They shouldn't be just, you know, marketing firms like they are now. And that's another negative consequence. And at the end of the day, you go back to 100,000 feet, and it's all about that big pile of billionaire dark money in politics being spent on essentially character assassination. And now where's that leading us? It's leading us to this precipice of political violence. So that's what it's about for me. It's doing the action that we need to do to stop that.
Ranked choice voting, was it something that always interested you for many, many years? Or is it because of where our politics have really gone here in the last 10 or 12 years?
No, it's certainly the latter. It's something that I've kind of been aware of. It seemed almost just sort of vaguely mathy to me, but mm-hmm. then seeing it actually applied and then seeing some of the explanations that are out there. There's this TikTok video out there that was released like 3 days ago of one of our volunteers using Legos to explain ranked choice voting. It's got like 700,000 views. It's awesome. Five-year-olds can understand this. We just need the proper breakdown. No, for me, out of college, I was just like, we need proportional representation to end gerrymandering. But I didn't get involved with Voters Not Politics. Politicians on the policymaking side. I got in and they decided that we should try this independent citizens redistricting commission, which sounded like a good idea to me. It was certainly better than letting the politicians draw their own maps. And so I kind of went off into anti-gerrymandering world and, you know, luckily found this thing coming back here. But I got to tell you, Rank My Vote over the last few years has been putting in the work at the local level. They've got ordinances passed to use ranked choice voting in Kalamazoo, East Lansing, in Royal Oak, Ann Arbor, and Ferndale. And right now, the state government says that since there's no specific law on the books telling the clerks how they can implement these elections, that those five places, even though the voters want ranked choice voting, are not allowed to have it. One of the things that the policy does on day one would be allow those jurisdictions to develop their ranked choice voting ballots and actually run ranked choice voting elections. All of the hardware, the tabulation hardware, can handle ranked choice voting. So the machines that the clerks use can all handle tabulating these elections. They will need a software upgrade that is available. But the even better news from the standpoint of folks that want to implement an election reform is this is the year, because in 2028, all of the counties and election offices are going to be getting new equipment overall. And the good news for us is that that equipment's going to be able to also handle ranked choice voting. So kind of at the end of the day on this one, it's super important that we allow those local municipalities to have that level of control over the way that they elect their mayors and their city council members. Folks can remember back to the usurpation of local control under Rick Snyder when he put in his handpicked bureaucrats to be in charge of things like Flint's water supply and what the consequences for us as voters were after that. Local control is, for a reason, super important in this state. And for us, one of the key elements of this policy is unlocking that aspect for those municipalities and the other ones that want it.
Let's say that, you know, you're going to get the signatures and it gets on the ballot. And this would be for 2026, correct? On the ballot?
So if it, yeah, that's correct. So if we get the signatures to get on the ballot, it's going to be on the ballot in November of 2026. Correct.
Okay. And let's say then it passes. How exactly then would this work? What should voters expect? Like, when would they first see or get the option for ranked choice voting? When would they see that on a statewide primary ballot, for instance?
So, yeah, statewide primary. I guess, like, the mechanics of the policy are super important to talk about right here, too. It would be 2030 is when it kicks in. Okay. We want to make sure that the election administrators have time to learn about and implement the changes. We want to make sure that we have plenty of time to get to every voter and make sure they're aware of the new power that they have when it comes to ranking certain offices at the top of the ballot. The policy does focus on the top of the ballot. It would implement ranked choice voting in primary elections and general elections, both for the governor's race, U.S. president, U.S. Senate, and U.S. Congress. Okay. It would also implement ranked choice voting in the general election for attorney general and secretary of state. It won't change the primary because the folks don't know this, but the primary itself is already a modified ranked choice voting election. Anyone that's voted at a statewide nominating convention for either of those two offices has participated in a caucus election that is modified ranked choice voting. One of the key elements of RCV is that the winner needs to have more than 50% of the vote to win. That's also true in the caucus environment. And the reason why is because it produces broad consensus behind the candidate. We don't bring this out when we're talking to folks. It's something that kind of comes up when I'm talking to elected officials in private. And there's usually a point in the conversation where it goes one of two ways. They go, Joe, this is great. We understand we need to lower the temperature. This can change the incentive. This is something that I can get behind. How do I start the endorsement process? Or it goes, Joe, I totally get it. I understand why we want this in the primary. It really helps our party have some cohesion, reduce the drama after that election and move on to the general. And my response there is always, if it's good for the party in the primary, it's good for the general public in the general election. And that's the thing that's super important, because I have folks talking to me from across the political spectrum, elected Republicans telling me, hey, Joe, we do need to do something to reduce the temperature. Now, they want to make sure that this is the change that they can firmly believe and sell to their constituency that will deliver on that. But a lot of folks are looking for a way to back away from this precipice. It's not just something that's happening on one side of the fence or the other. And that's also something that's important about ranked choice voting, is it's a level playing field. You know, it benefits the voters and it benefits the candidates that are able to speak to voters on issues. If the parties are able to organize around that, I think more power to them. I think that's a lot better than organizing the parties around character assassination.
Right. And as you've already previously mentioned, ranked choice voting has been approved in 5 Michigan cities, cities that aren't small by any stretch of the imagination here in Michigan, pretty big cities. It shows that ranked choice voting is supported by voters in those communities, right?
Just so we're clear, voters support it when it's on the ballot. That's a real thing. But those cities are currently not allowed to run ranked choice voting elections. The state won't let them. We know ranked choice voting works from states like Maine and Alaska, which, by the way, are two of the more independent states in the country, which successfully run ranked choice voting elections. And the data out of those and New York City in the primary are just, it's astounding. Voters understand it. They think it's simple. They like it to the tune of 80 or 90%. And they also recognize marked decrease in the drama, turmoil, and noise in the election season. And they notice an increase on the candidate speaking to values and speaking to issues. Like, that is extremely real. That's the thing that we're trying to get at. That's the thing that we've been talking about a lot for months, even before the recent violence in Grand Blanc and before the assassination of Charlie Kirk. We've been talking about the need to lower the temperature and the rhetoric of our politics while bringing more voters in. And that's something that we need to recognize across the board. And I don't care what party anybody is a member of, but the negativity, yes, it is a pathway to win at times for our elections. And it's also driving voters away. And we should be thinking about what we value here. For me, I don't know that we're going to be able to get politicians to put those values of the voters and the needs of the voters and the well-being of all of us in front of their ability to win an election. We have to change the incentive of what it takes to win an election towards that more constructive politics. We have an obligation to do this at this point. And certainly at Rank My Vote, our 2,000 volunteers are feeling the totality of that obligation. And not only are they feeling that, they're stepping up and doing that work.
You know, it would have been kind of cool and interesting if we would have had ranked choice voting in next year's elections, really, because we're going to be voting for a new governor, a new United States senator, all the congressional seats, and on, because I feel like the current primary system, Joe, doesn't really allow for that kind of coalition building that you're talking about. And the winner of some of these primary races will probably garner below 50%. And it's that kind of system that is discouraging, like you said, discouraging voters from then wanting to participate in the entire process. It makes them feel like they're left out.
Yeah. Something that we hear in terms of a criticism that people, this is completely made up, that they try to apply to ranked choice voting. It's made up when it's applied to ranked choice voting. It's a real thing. They call it ballot drop off. And folks that care about elections do care that voters vote down the ballot. Now, when I'm having this conversation, I'm doing it from being one of the most successful organizers at getting voters to vote down ballot, not just where I live and where I'm working in Ottawa County, but statewide. I've done a lot to make sure that we spread the message of the importance of voting down, especially at the county commission level, but we don't stop there, down to school board and making sure that the voters know how important it is. And that's successful at increasing overall turnout. But the concern is that by giving voters more options at the top of the ballot, that somehow, I honestly don't know mechanically how this works, but it's presented, and I say this very tongue-in-cheek, no one actually says this, but oh no, I have to fill in another oval. My hand's too tired. I can't finish out the ballot here. It doesn't make any sense. The voters aren't sick of having too many options, right? They're not sick of voting. They're sick of the BS that gets inscribed in our election cycle. It's really important that we correctly identify this, because if we start building our elections or continue to allow our elections to be run under the assumption that if we give voters too many options, if we address voters as real people and think that they're intelligent folks, that it's going to cause ballot drop off. Those things are nonsense. One of the major criticisms coming from the right of ranked choice voting is that it forces voters to be better informed about more candidates, as if this is some sort of bad thing. And it's hard for me to say that and not giggle. And so we know for a fact that we open up the options for voters and they actually explore those options. And we need to be pursuing that. And I'm saying that as someone who is, and again, I think one of the most successful organizers when it comes to getting people to vote down ballot over the last 5 years in this state. That is important to me, and it's important to Rank My Vote.
I take it then you were not surprised when the Republican state House majority passed a bill to ban ranked choice voting here in the state. Now, of course, if it passes on the ballot, that gets enshrined in the Constitution, and such a law would then be null and void, and it's not going to get past the Democratic Senate or Governor Whitmer, of course. But I take it you still weren't surprised that they would push to ban ranked choice voting in the House?
That's completely unsurprising. And it's not just because they're Republicans. You know, it's that one, some of these folks are straight up addicted to negative politics, and they know that ranked choice voting is going to make that potentially backfire for them. Like, that's very real. And again, I know that from Ottawa Impact, because that's how those folks won the primary, by being just viciously evil towards other Republicans. And so, you know, we have those elements across the board. Most of them are in the state house and in the Republican camp there, but they kind of stood up and made themselves known on this specific issue, and that they don't want to hear from voters, that they want to be able to say they should be running the campaigns that they want to run, and they should be rewarded for all the toxicity that they've already been rewarded for. You know, that's super not surprising. The interesting pushback that we've gotten, and this is few and far between though, has been from not necessarily elected folks, but folks tied on some level tangentially to the Democratic Party establishment. And again, this is few and far between, and it's folks that generally they want to have the conversation through and fully understand things. And these are the folks that say, I understand why it's good in the primary. But a couple of them have heard that we are doing really, really well with young voters, some of which who have had only three presidential elections. If you're under 30, you've voted in three presidential elections where your choices were Donald Trump or a centrist Democrat. And if you are a centrist Democrat, you know, that's good that you've had the option of being represented. But you know that there's another portion of your party and they don't have a viable choice. They don't get to express that will. And so we are super popular with young folks. And there has been a couple of times where I've heard heard the other side of the table that's still learning about this flirt with the idea that either party, but the Democrats in particular, don't need to pursue persuasion of young voters. And that's like absolute laughable nonsense, right? A lot of the times when we're having these conversations about folks who are deeply invested, and again, both sides of the fence on this, that type of hesitancy, it starts showing itself with some very, very absurd pushback. And by then, it's kind of very clear that folks understand this is at least, if they don't believe that this is the change that can deliver lowering the temperature, they believe that we need to do something to lower the temperature, and we have very, very few options in front of us. So no, not surprised that Rachel Smith, who's probably running for Secretary of State as a Republican, stepped up and opposed this. The fun thing for your listeners here is if they go back, they're able to go back and look at the photos, I think Distill Social put them out, of Michonne and Matt Maddox trying to figure out tabulation of the ranked choice voting election for the nomination of the Attorney General at the Republican nominating convention in Grand Rapids a few years ago. Yeah, I believe that it's confusing for those two. but I think we got a photo of the exact moment Matt Maddox decided that he would scream as loud as he could that any election reform was communist at that event. But there is a photo of that. It's hilarious. It's getting harder. I don't know if you noticed this. Total sidetrack. It's getting harder to do searches for previous content on social media. Harder on Twitter, X, yes. Harder on Facebook. I don't think Facebook even allows you to kind of search your own content. It used to be kind of like an archive.
So. No, you're right. You're right. You're right. It is hard to go back and find that stuff. And like you've mentioned before, when you've been on here, when did Elon take over? What was that, 2021, somewhere around there? Yeah. Yep. I could tell a big change. You said you got shadow banned. I could tell that my algorithms were changing, not just in what I was receiving, but anytime I would like send something out, I'd get a consistent number of responses. And all of a sudden that just dropped completely. That has changed. And now they're going to try to do the same with TikTok, too, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, like, I fully expect that to happen with TikTok. And I think it'd be interesting if it didn't. I don't know where the alternative lies. Gather your audience while you can. Tell them to turn notifications on. Is that solution? Is that the world we're living in? Do we have to build a counter Telegram? This is awkward. I used to be very, 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 very loud about net neutrality. And that fight has just been washed out. Like,
yes, it has.
What do we do, man?
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know. While I still have you here for just a quick moment, and since you just mentioned it, I wanted to know if you were getting any kind of, and I don't know if pushback is the right phrase, but or resistance or anything like that, but were you getting concerns from some state Democratic Party officials? We brought up the Republicans. Were you hearing any concerns about this from state Democrats? I've got to assume that maybe a couple are like, do we really want to change the system? This is the only system that we've known, and some of us have benefited from it.
Actually, the interesting thing is a few folks doing some statewide campaigning have kind of stepped on some interesting situations in Reddit in particular, because we are very popular on that platform, which is pretty cool. I like that. We get the word about our events on there pretty well. Folks are being public figures, and they try to interact in those same avenues, and they might get asked about ranked choice voting from just interested folks on the platform. And if they don't have a solid response for that, it makes it pretty awkward for them. We think that those elected officials should definitely do their research on any issue that they're speaking to. But we have had a few conversations where either that has directly happened or elected officials have kind of noticed that that's happened. Those are still friendly, good context conversations. But it makes me think if there are other folks maybe noticing that type of thing and they don't want to be super confrontational, even though they may be hesitant on some changes. Personally, I'm very comfortable being at the forefront of improvements to both democracy and our elections. When I started with Voters Not Politicians, there were exactly zero political professionals in Michigan saying that it was possible. In fact, almost everybody was saying you could not run a petition on anti-gerrymandering because it was too complex and too confusing for the voters to understand. And so when folks keep coming back with that, when they came back with that on Prop 2 with vote by mail, when they came back with that on reproductive freedom, and now some folks in the State House Election Integrity Committee, the Republicans there, are coming back with it's too confusing. My 18-year-old son would be just totally confused by this. Just absolute nonsense. And I'm sure that all of their voting age kids actually would have no problem getting this. But it gets tired and repetitive. And then it also gets very, very transparently revealed to be spoken in bad faith. This is ranking. It's something everybody does every day. If you talk to high schoolers about it and you're like, hey, high schoolers there, raise your hand if you've ever seen a tier list video. Every single one will raise both hands. I'm watching one right now, Mr. Spall. balding, you know, this stuff is ubiquitous. So saying voters aren't going to be able to rank candidates or that it's going to be a trouble for them in some way is just not the case. Now, there are folks where we want to make sure that there are voter education available so they know that they're doing their civic duty in the best way they can. That's awesome. We have the added ability now in the year of our Lord 2025 and in 2030, even we'll still be able to at least use social media on some level to spread information about how to use ranked choice voting. I think that a lot of the reverberation from the New York mayoral race wasn't in a vacuum, right? This was stuff that popped on TikTok and Instagram, and folks are seeing that. My friend Julie over at Distill is an Australian, voted in an RCV election. She has always done that, but she says that she goes back to visit dad, and the TikTok content down there is all ranked choice voting related strategy.
Yeah.
It's people strategizing on how to do preferential voting for their system. Same thing in New York City. And I think that we're going to continue to see that increase in Alaska and Maine and hopefully in Michigan as we go to implement this in 2030.
All right. If people would like to learn more about Rank My Vote, where can they go? And especially if they want to help out.
Yes, yes. It's super important. We are grassroots run, grassroots funded, and we have 2,000 volunteers out there getting income paper. We'd like to double that number up. They can go to RankMI, like Michigan, rankmyvote.org/volunteer. Volunteering is super easy. We have some documents that you can go through. You can check out the video to make sure you can explain ranked choice voting really well. But at the end of the day, it's super easy. People are lining up to sign the petition. We'll put a clipboard in your hand and get you out there in a place where you can get ink on paper to make this needed change.
All right. Outstanding. Joe Spalding, campaign director for Rank My Vote. We will keep an eye on how everything is going there. And hey, next year, I'd like to have you back on again.
Oh, Pat, this is the highlight of my political year every time. Appreciate you. Appreciate the work you do. And I appreciate your audience for listening.
It's Michigan's premier progressive podcast, Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If Pat's brand of progressive pontifications is getting you all riled up and you'd like to give him a piece of your mind, or if you'd like to tell him he's doing an outstanding job and to keep up the great work, just email him. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Do you have stories you think Pat must know about or guest ideas for future episodes? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to share your thoughts on how to grow Michigan's population or which flavor of Faygo Pop is the best? It's Rock and Rye, by the way. Just email Pat, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, here's Pat.
A special thanks for Rank My Vote's Joe Spalding and for stopping by to explain ranked choice voting and why he's fighting to get it on the state's constitution. And I'm all for it, and I completely agree with Joe on two specific arguments for ranked choice voting. One, it produces more engagement with voters and increases voter participation, again, as we saw in New York City. And two, it will help hamstring the powerful billionaire donor class, and also those party insiders. I'm still not understanding why MAGA Republicans are against this, considering how it will benefit their party's primaries as well. And one more thing. Last week, I gave a little advice to everyone that in these tough times, maybe doing something good in your community or joining a nonprofit or helping out a certain group would be a good idea nowadays. It would help you find some purpose and help you feel like that you're making an immediate change in your little corner of the world while the rest of the world spirals out of control. Well, you just heard Joe Spalding, who told us that joining the Rank My Vote effort helped give him some purpose and helped give him a goal to make Michigan a better place while we can't control everything else that's happening around the country, all right? So there's a good lesson there. Visit rankmyvote.org to learn more and to volunteer. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. As of this recording, we have a bit of good news to report on regarding negotiations of the Michigan budget fight. First, the October deadline of a budget happened with no budget agreement. The MAGA House, the Democratic majority in the state Senate, and Governor Whitmer agreed to pass a one-month stopgap to keep our state government running. Now, you'll recall late last week when Whitmer, MAGA House Speaker Matt Hall, and Democratic Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks released a joint statement saying that a budget deal had been reached. But it didn't really look too good considering a bill that'll probably be over 1,000 pages long still wasn't produced by September November 30th. And that made sense because many legislators on both sides of the aisle were frustrated that they'd be forced to vote on something they really hadn't seen. Makes sense. So I was none too surprised the budget didn't pass by that October 1st deadline. Now it's being reported as of this recording that free school meals at public schools will continue, and that is excellent news, not to mention it makes perfect common sense, a major win for progressives. Dave Eggert from Crain's Detroit also reports that both the MAGA House and Democratic Senate are taking an axe to corporate welfare in the state, and that is also excellent, excellent news. As I said in my Monday musing this week, that's a major victory for progressives who have been calling for an end to failed corporate welfare spending that hasn't produced many jobs here in the state, and it's not really adding vast improvements to the state. And MAGA Republicans joined our side on this one. See, once again, progressive policies are popular. And it is sad that it's something that Governor Whitmer never sided with us on. It's also being reported that there will be zero cuts to U of M and MSU, but I haven't seen the details of our other higher education institutions. But one idea, and I don't know if it's going to pass, but one idea that I believe is incredibly bad is this plan to tax marijuana by 24% in order to raise $420 million per year for roads. Yes, I know, 420. Cool. But for the money that we could save on corporate welfare, since we refuse to even dare raise taxes on corporations just a little bit, or the money that we are wasting on data centers, which are sucking up millions of gallons of water and electricity, and the money that we could save by investing in more rail and transit to lower the wear and tear on our roads, this is just an awful and stupid plan. Even more, it'll lead to less people buying legal pot, as now they'll just opt for the black market and thereby lead to less than the $420 million Lansing hopes to raise from this pot tax. And you see, and I think many of you get it, it's always about finding ways to screw over the working class. Now, I visited a local marijuana shop in my area recently, and it was busy, and it was filled with working class customers. How does attacking their pocketbooks help Michigan in the long run? And for all of the talk about helping small businesses thrive in the state, this tax will drive some shops out of business. Now, maybe if we implemented, I don't know, a progressive taxing system instead of the failed flat income tax system that we've had here in Michigan, maybe then we'd ensure that those at the top had more skin in the game to help the state in which they live. Maybe that wouldn't be a bad idea, instead of always finding new and inventive ways of taxing the working class. I mean, I know that would make so much more sense, but we can't have any of that now in Michigan, can we?
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Once again, special thanks to Joe Spaulding from Rank My Vote for joining us here this week. And Joe reminded me after we stopped recording that in addition to signing petitions to get ranked choice voting on next year's ballot, to also sign those petitions for the Invest in My Kids ballot initiative, which would levy a 5% tax on those earning over $1 million in the state to help pay for our school budgets. Much needed there. And also to sign petitions to Mop Up Michigan, which stands for Money Out of Politics, and it's another ballot initiative that would ban political contributions from regulated monopolies like DTE and other major state contractors. So don't forget about those proposals, because they could be on the ballot next year, and they are people-powered and people-centered proposals that will pass. But we all have to help push them across the finish line. Finally, as of this recording, the Detroit Tigers have at least one game remaining. And it's the wild card series decider against their nemesis, the Cleveland Indians, on Thursday. And I don't have to state the obvious by saying it's been a horrible last 6 weeks for Tiger baseball and for fans. But I think the fans could at least deal with this late season collapse if the Tigers can somehow, some way, reach the next round. Get it done, Tigers. So, go Tigers, go Lions, and until next time, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.